Well, this is my burden. It goes everywhere that I go. Sometimes I think about it more than other times, but it always slows me down. It's uncomfortable, and it keeps me from doing some of the things that I want to do or I know I should do. Sometimes it's even painful. I'm going to unpack some of it because there's lots of heavy things in here that I always have to carry around. There's the burden of my job, my reputation, how I'm doing, all the responsibilities I have, the things I got to do every week, how things are going, how people think I'm doing, how am I doing so far? I don't know. Thank you. One I can drop. That's good. I have financial burden, bills to pay, people to take care of, make sure that we get the light bill and the mortgage paid, all that kind of stuff, the worry that comes along with all the stuff that we got to do, figuring out things like retirement and savings and all the things that week to week, day to day, there are. I have a family burden. I love my family, but I have a young boy, and there's things that I have to teach him, and sometimes I worry that something bad might happen to him, or just got to make sure that he's going to grow up and make good life decisions, and I really hope that happens. Sometimes a bit of a burden thinking about that. Got the marriage burden and the fact that I just called my marriage a burden, so that'll come back to weigh on me later. I love my wife, but I got to make sure that my marriage is good and strong and that I'm doing all the kinds of things to be a good husband and making sure that our marriage is vital and going well. I have my body, my physicality, you know, making sure that I'm healthy. Am I putting on a little bit of weight? How do I look? All that kind of stuff. I've got other people's opinion, how people feel about me and think about me. And you know, sometimes, I don't know, what are you guys thinking? No cheers last time. I got a cheer. Okay, that's fine. Just put the weight back in. Okay, and then I've got, you know, the past. Sometimes a guilty conscience, things I've done. I got the future, wondering about all how my life is going to turn out and how things are going to go and whether or not my plans are going to succeed and I'm going to end up where I want to be. And I've got all these things that weigh kind of heavy sometimes that I carry around all the time. And I just wanted to unpack some of that and show you guys, because I think I'm probably not the only one that carries around a burden and some heavy weights on an ongoing basis. The reality is all of us at some point are carrying around weights, things that hold us back, slow us down, tire us out, make us feel like we're not all that we could be or should be. Some things that we wish we could do, but we can't because we're held back a little bit. And that's what this series has kind of been about, is about some of the weights that we hold on our backs and that we go through life on. And we've been talking about 5 habits of spiritually strong people, because wherever you're at, there's definitely times in your life, and you might be there now, where you feel like you're not all that strong. And so we've gone through 4 habits coming into today. We'll talk about our 5th. And we'd love for you, if you're just kind of landing with us here this morning for the first time, to go back online and you can wade through our series and listen to those messages up to here. But today I want to talk about one of the most powerful strategies that we have been given in order to unburden ourselves. And so if you've come in today and you feel a little bit of burden, you've got your own weights that you're carrying on your back, whatever those are, I want to give you what I think is maybe the most powerful strategy for unburdening yourself. I think it's a huge gift for us, as we know that in this life we're all weighed down at different points. Because our burdens don't bring us joy, they don't bring us peace, they don't lead to more happiness or fulfillment, they don't help us relax or enjoy life. And I believe that we are not actually designed to carry all of these weights, all of these burdens on our own. And we are designed, not necessarily to have a stress-free life, but to enjoy the beautiful, wonderful gift of life that God has given us. And I believe that He wants us to flourish in our lives. And so we want to try and help each other a little bit this morning deal with some of the burdens that we have. And the principle that I want to talk to today is an ancient one. It comes from the Jewish people for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. They've been practicing it. In Hebrew, they call it Shabbat. We call it in English Sabbath. And it is a word that means to end, to cease, to rest. And it is this beautiful principle that goes all the way back to the story that the ancient Israelites had when they were talking about creation. It starts in the very first chapter of the Bible. If you turn to the first page, Genesis chapter 1, it's this beautiful poem that describes in poetic fashion how God creates the world. That there's day after day, and in each day God creates something. He creates environments, and then He creates things in order to fulfill environments, and all the way up to the pinnacle of creation when He creates human beings, you and I. And then it comes to the 7th day. After 6 days of creation, it says that God rested. It is Saturday, the seventh day of the week, the week of the day of Shabbat, the day of Sabbath or rest, where God ceases. And if it's really interesting, is if you actually go into the ancient world and you read about different groups of people in the ancient Near East, they all had a similar story about creation, except there were some big differences. They all had different ways of describing how God was interacting with the world, with the universe, and with human beings, and they had all these stories, and they had similarities and differences. But in the Israelite story, the one that we have in the Christian Bible in the Old Testament, we have God creating in 6 days. He works to create. He speaks things into creation. And then on the seventh day, he rests. And some of us, you might stop and go, why does God have to rest? If God is God, did he get too tired? Was it too much for him? Does he have too many burdens that he's got to sit and take a day off? That really seems a little bit strange. But in the ancient world, rest was especially for the gods, was known in a little bit of different terms. In fact, rest is what happens when a crisis gets resolved and stability gets achieved so that everyday life can begin. So rest is what happens when there's this big crisis where something's going on, where there's a problem, and then the problem gets fixed, and then you can rest. And it doesn't mean necessarily right off the top that you don't do anything, but it means that you can go back to a stable, flourishing kind of life. And the biblical account there in Genesis 1, if you read it carefully, it starts with this kind of chaotic nothingness. Right? It's this poetic way of saying things weren't ordered properly. And then you see in Genesis 1 this very ordered poem that talks about how God takes kind of chaos and he brings order. So there's this primordial crisis. No life could be here. There's nothingness. And then God puts it all together the way that we see it today, the world, the universe, all in this beautiful, harmonious way. And once the crisis is cleared up and the situation has been created for life to flourish, says, now God rested. It's the kind of thing we should think about kind of a king. It's not that the king does nothing, but once the crisis is averted, once he creates stability for his kingdom, he sits on his throne, and it means now he can start to reign. Or maybe closer to home for us, we think of a CEO. Say, where's the CEO of this company? What are they up to? Well, they're in their office, sitting on their chair. That's the place where the decisions get made. They're sitting there ready to do the things and call the shots that they have been put in charge of. And that's what we see in Genesis 1, is that as everything gets created, then God rests. Or he sits on his throne of his temple. His temple's the universe, all that he's created, and now his presence is there. He sits there. It means that God had now created the environment for flourishing, for life, for goodness, for everything that was created to enjoy creation the way that it was meant to. It's this beautiful state. But then we read in the next chapter, as we start to unpack this story about when God creates human beings, and you've likely heard the story of Adam and Eve, you just at least know who the character are, and those characters, Adam and Eve, the man and the woman, is really a story about all of us. And what happens is you get to the seventh day of creation, and God is resting, and it's symbolic of the fact that now everything is as it should be. Crisis is over. Chaos is gone. Order is here, and everything in creation is now free to live as it's supposed to be. And then what interrupts that beautiful situation is not the eighth day. It doesn't say, and then the eighth day came, and God started working again, putting things back. Something else interrupted it. And we see in that story of Adam and Eve, but it was their lack of trust of God. It was a breakdown in relationship between God and them that all of a sudden they didn't know if they could trust God's word, and so they started living in a different way. There was a rift between God and between them. There was a rift then between each of them, and they became ashamed and vulnerable and all of a sudden realized that they were vulnerable, and all that goodness that was created for them to flourish and to love life and enjoy life was broken. And that's what interrupts the seventh day. It's what we call sin. That all of a sudden there's crisis again. All of a sudden things aren't exactly the way that they're supposed to be. All of a sudden there's burdens that we didn't have before placed on our back that we feel like we have to carry on our own. But the Israelites continue to celebrate each and every week the Sabbath. that no matter what was going on in their world, it actually was one of these commands that made it into the Ten Commandments, one of the most important rules that they had in the ancient world, in order to rest, to do nothing, to take it easy on the seventh day of every week. They continued to celebrate it. They didn't work because it was a reminder that God's administration was coming back, that one day God would again do what he did in creation. He would take chaos and he'd put everything back together and he'd order it for flourishing of life. And the chaos and the crisis would be over again. And so to remind themselves each and every week on Saturday, they did no work, they relaxed, they rested. It was a reminder that they ultimately weren't in charge and that they ultimately couldn't fix all the chaos in the world on their own. But there was one who was going to fix the chaos. He was going to bring them through the crisis, and they looked back to God and they wanted him to do what he did in creation again in their lives. And so they rested, looking to God, praying to God, just reminding themselves it's not all up to us, reminding themselves that one day God would once again sit on his throne and say, the crisis is now over. You can relax. God's administration is now working in your life and in this world to make things the way that they're supposed to be, just like he did when we created all things. And so for Jesus, when we see Jesus step onto the scene, he addresses how some people in his religious tradition, he was a Jewish man, were interpreting the Sabbath. And actually, if you read through the Gospels, the accounts of Jesus' life, the Sabbath becomes one of the points that is so hotly debated that actually the other religious people of his day come after him about his interpretation of how to deal with the Sabbath, how to live out this Sabbath law that the people had been observing for hundreds and hundreds of years. And for Jesus, the Sabbath wasn't a list of rules to follow, but it was a promise of an unburdened life. See, some people, we'll see this in a minute, it kind of got it mixed up, and they had made it this rule, and it was in the Ten Commandments, so they knew it was important, and they had to follow it right, and so they had all this list of stuff that you could do and you couldn't do on Saturdays, and if you didn't do them, then you're in big, big trouble. And they had this very rigid way of looking at the Sabbath, saying, you have to rest. When Jesus steps on the scene, and he does something we'll see in a minute that is actually so scandalous that over this issue, there are people who want him dead, because of what he does on the Sabbath and how he interprets it. And sometimes religious people, and be careful if you're a little bit religious, are some of the most burdened people and some of the least interested in helping other people alleviate their burdens. Those of us who have a religious streak, whatever that looks like for you, who get so into the rules and a certain mode and a certain idea of how things have to happen, we are sometimes the most burdened people and the least interested in helping unburden other people. You know, that's you today. I hope that you'll walk out of here with some of those weights lifted off of you. I hope you'll embrace the wonderful gift of Sabbath, of rest, that Jesus not only commands, but as we'll see in a second, shows and displays for us in such a powerful way that you can walk out of here celebrating and remembering that God is on his throne, which means you don't have to play God in your life or somebody else's life or in the world, but instead, you can trust him, you can relax, you can rest, you can celebrate. One of you can go out for dinner for free. That was fun, wasn't it? Hope you enjoyed that. Okay, Mark chapter 2, if you have a Bible with you. If you don't have a Bible with you, the words will be on the screen behind me. We encourage you to follow along. Bring an app on your phone each and every week or your actual printed Bible and follow along as we read together and study together. And it says in Mark chapter 2, verse 23, one Sabbath day, as Jesus was walking through some grain fields, his disciples began breaking off heads of grain to eat. But the Pharisees said to Jesus, look, why are they breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath? Man, just another reminder. Religious people can ruin everything, can't they? I mean, here's the rule. It's Saturday. Take the day off. Rest. Jesus shows up and he goes, okay, we're resting. His disciples get hungry. They're walking along in a grain field, so they grab something and eat it. And the religious people, these Pharisees, come, and right off the bat, they're going to ruin how they're resting, how they're taking Sabbath. Look what they're doing. You're not allowed to harvest crops on the Sabbath. That's part of the rules, because the Sabbath means you're supposed to rest, which means you're not supposed to work. Harvesting is work. Therefore, they are breaking the rules. Now, the Pharisees, we hear a lot about them throughout the scriptures. The Pharisees, they weren't the police. They didn't have an authority to throw anybody in jail or to kick anybody out. But the Pharisees had an incredible amount of social influence in the community. So they didn't have an official capacity. They were actually self-appointed. They weren't like the police saying, you broke the rules, we're going to punish you. But they had so much influence in society, and specifically in the religious and political culture of their day, that people really worried about what they thought. And they had a lot of kind of those alleyways into important, significant, powerful people in their culture. And the way that we should probably think of them, again, is not necessarily police, but maybe as investigative journalists. Like, you know, the people that some public figure is running for political office. And so you got the people that say, we're going to dig up all the dirt we can on this person and tell everybody that they're not really a loyal citizen, that they're not really good, that they maybe put on a good show, but behind the scenes, they're not good. So here come the Pharisees, and it's the Sabbath, and they see Jesus walking with the disciples. Not supposed to work. You're supposed to rest. That's our law. That's our rule. And they start picking the heads of grain so they can eat it. They're just hungry. And there's the Pharisees. Ah, he's not a loyal Jew. He breaks the law, and his followers break the law, and he's not doing anything about it. We got to get him. Don't vote for this guy. Don't follow this guy. This is a disloyal Jewish person who doesn't follow the rules, who doesn't follow the law. And you can't follow somebody like that. Verse 25 says, Jesus said to them, here's his response. Haven't you ever read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God during the days when Abiathar was high priest, and he broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. He also gave some to his companions. Jesus then brings up a story. He does this great. He goes, okay, you guys, you are historical. You love your Bible. You study your Bible. You know all the characters. You know all the stories. So Jesus brings up a story from 1 Samuel 21. He says, remember King David, one of the greatest kings in our history? Well, after he was anointed king, that means Samuel, his great prophet, said this is going to be the king. But Saul was still king, and Saul was trying to kill him because David was going to take his place. And so David's on the run, and he's got a bunch of men with him. And he shows up at this holy place, and on this time and food that you're not supposed to eat, this bread that was set aside for the Sabbath, for the priests, for part of their religious rituals. Because you weren't supposed to bake bread and make all the bread, so they made it ahead of time, then they left it there, and it was sacred, and you weren't supposed to eat it unless you were the priest and it was part of the whole temple stuff that you were supposed to do. But he says, you remember David? He just went, and he ate it. You know why he ate it? Because he was hungry, and he gave it to his companions. You know why? Because they were hungry. In other words, remember King David, this great, wonderful, awesome king in our history? He broke the rules. Why can't I? Well, because he was the king, for one. I don't think we can just all break the rules just because one king did it. Who do you think you are, Jesus? Jesus brings up that, hey, if a king could break the rules, can't I? Hey, priests do work on the Sabbath. He brings this up in another one of the Sabbath debates because he says, don't priests have to work on the Sabbath? Right? Like some of you, your day of rest, you grew up with a day of rest and it was Sunday. I got to work on Sunday. This is my biggest day of the week. And that Jesus brings that up in another one of the, he goes, well, the priests work. How does that work? How do they get away with it? I thought we're not supposed to work, but how do the priests do it? Oh, so there's exceptions to the rule. All right, let's just point that out. Verse 27, then Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. Okay, now we're going to get into, because in a couple of verses, if you kept reading this chapter, you're going to find out that they actually... after this exchange, the Pharisees set out to destroy Jesus. And they do it because after this story, the next thing he does on a Sabbath is heals somebody. And they get so mad, they go to destroy him. And you sit there and say, relax. Like, isn't that the whole point of the day? You're going to kill this guy because he healed somebody and you're calling that work? Isn't that absolutely crazy? You want to destroy this guy because you're supposed to rest, but his men got hungry, so they just kind of scooped a couple of grains? You're really going to go that far? Why are you so mad? Here's why they're so mad. Jesus calls himself the Son of Man and says he's the Lord even of the Sabbath. So here's why Jesus says he's allowed to pick grain, or his disciples are allowed to pick grain on the Sabbath. The Son of Man is a term, comes from the book of Daniel, a prophetic book back in the Old Testament, was the expected Messiah who would be given kingly power. The Jews were looking forward to someone who would come in and essentially be the right proper king, like David way back in the Old Testament, and set things right. Jesus goes, hey, Son of Man is here, which means I am Lord of the Sabbath. I get to tell you what happens on the Sabbath, not you get to tell me what happens on the Sabbath. The Son of Man is here. That is a bold prediction. Hey, the true king is right in front of you. That's why they get so mad. That's why they set out and say, we got to destroy this guy. Who does he think he is saying he's the real king? Who does he think he is claiming he's the Messiah? That was a threat to everybody else who was in charge. Some people must have thought he was crazy, that he was foolish, that he could never do it. But Jesus said the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, or the Sabbath was created for people. People weren't created for the Sabbath. He's going, hey, the king's here. And I'm here to tell you that my role is to unburden you, not to burden you. Hey, religious people, you're really good at putting burdens on people's shoulders. You've even done it with the Sabbath, which the whole point of it is to unburden people, tell them they don't have to carry their burdens around because God is going to carry them. And I'm here to show people, as the Lord of the Sabbath, as the Son of Man, that God doesn't create rules to burden people down. God gives us grace to take burdens off our shoulders. So he goes on to heal a man who had a withered hand, something wrong with his hand and how it works. And again, people go to set out to destroy him. And it just shows how far off in our interpretation of following the rules and following the Bible that we could possibly get. We could completely miss the entire point. Jesus was saying that the Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. God doesn't set up arbitrary rules just so that you can follow them. He's given us gifts to help us experience his peace and his joy and the kind of life that he has for us. He wants to remind us on the Sabbath that those burdens and those weights that you think are too heavy for you are not too heavy for him, and that God is the one in control. And if God is in control of this entire universe, you don't have to be. You can rest. You can take the day off. You can celebrate. You can enjoy the life that God has given you. Here's the bottom line. God doesn't want to burden you with rules. He wants to unburden you with grace. And that's what this is. This is gracious. This is a gift. God's saying, enjoy the fact that I'm in charge and you don't have to be. Enjoy the fact that even though all your work is not done, that's okay. You don't need to be productive 100% of the time. Enjoy the fact that even though you haven't been able to solve all the problems of your life, I'm bigger than that and I'm in more control than you could ever possibly imagine. Enjoy it, because it's not just a day off. It's a time for you to remember that God takes crises and brings order, that God takes what's wrong in the world and he will set it right, that when it doesn't look like God is around, God has promised us that he will step in and bring us an unburdened life, and that we can trust him. This is good news. Time to celebrate. It's the Sabbath. Rest. Rest in who God is and what he's done for you. So listen, today it's the last long weekend of the summer. And in terms of application, I just want to give you an opportunity to experience that, to be reminded that you're not in charge of everything, and that God is in charge of everything, that you can trust him, that he's given you this gift of Sabbath. And Sabbath isn't just a day of the week. In fact, other writers in the New Testament will talk and they'll say, listen, don't argue about what day the Sabbath is. What can I do on Saturday? Or is it Sunday? Or when am I not supposed to? That's not the point. The point is, can you just rest? Can you put down your burdens? Can you lay them before God and allow him to carry you instead of you feeling like you have to carry everything? It is a strategy for letting Jesus unburden us, to take our stress, our worries, our guilt, our shame, our fear, all of these which are a result of the brokenness that we all experience in our life, the fact that there are crisis points that are happening, but to say that we trust that God is a God who brings order from chaos. Even in the midst of a crisis, that God is the one who helps us resolve. So here's what I would love for you to do. And for some of you, it might be today, it might be tomorrow if you have a little bit of time off still this weekend. But schedule a time to and pick a place to stop and rest. Again, maybe today you've got nothing the rest of the day and you can just say, I am going to rest the rest of today and just be reminded this is a beautiful gift. Maybe you've got the day off tomorrow. Maybe you don't. You've got to look down the road to next weekend or sometime during this week and just schedule a time and a place where you're going to say, I'm not going to get overwhelmed with everything. I'm not going to be doing everything. I'm going to put all my burdens down. I'm just going to enjoy the fact that God is powerful and God is loving and God is in control. How do we do that? Pray and play. So these are the two things that you do. You pray. Because here's what's going to happen for some of you. Some of you, you're going to try and rest, but being unproductive is going to be so hard for you. And you're going to think of all the things that still need to get done and all the problems that you still need to solve and all the things at work that are going to have to happen tomorrow and all the things relationally that aren't exactly perfect and all the problems that are in your head and stress and worries and what ifs and what ifs and what ifs. And if that's you, you need to continue to pray through that. And you need to take these burdens. Maybe you need to go actually find some of these and walk down to a place where there's water and just throw it into the ocean of grace and say, God, I'm giving you this. And I'm going to spend some time praying, saying, God, I can't carry these around by myself all the time. Do you lift them from me? And spend some time praying, remembering that God hasn't left you alone to live your life without him. It's the opposite. He's done everything that was needed to step into your life and to empower the life that he's created you to live. So connect with him. Acknowledge his presence in whatever you're doing. Lift up the burdens that you have and leave them at the foot of the cross, because whatever's filling your guilty conscience, whatever regrets you have, whatever past problems and issues you have, it's no match for what Jesus did on the cross. To die and forgive you. Say, I'll take those burdens. And there's nothing in your future or your present that is such a big obstacle that he can't overcome it. And he's put that on display when he not only died for the people that he loves, but he was risen to new life. To show you that if there's anything in your life that you think is too heavy for you to live the kind of life God has called you to live, then just know that through Jesus, God has defeated the greatest obstacle that you could ever imagine, death. And he wants to carry you into your future and in your present to give you the power, to give you the strength, to tell you that you don't have to carry all your burdens on your own. So spend some time praying. Remember it. Offer those things to God. Take a rock, throw it in the lake. Do what you have to do to say, God, this burden I'm not carrying without you anymore. And then play. Eat good food. Listen to great music. Spend time with family and friends who you love. And as you do it, acknowledge God's presence in it, that he's here and that every good thing that you have is a good and beautiful gift from him. And that while there are burdens in life and weights to carry, celebrate that he is a God who is strong enough and willing enough to carry us and to carry our heaviest burdens. And enjoy some Sabbath time as a gift of grace that God has given you. Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and I'm gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. Heavenly Father, thank you that you are a God who unburdens us with grace. So often, God, I fear that we think of you as a God who just wants to pour more burdens on us and more requirements and more things to carry. But God, today I pray that for all of us who come in with different weights to carry, guilt, maybe shame, maybe worries, insecurities, vulnerabilities, problems at work and in relationships, God, today I pray that we all might know way deep down in our soul a rest that comes from remembering that through Jesus you sat on your throne once again, that you are taking our crisis and giving us order again. God, for those who are just starting school, heading back to work, dealing with family issues, I pray that we might all experience a supernatural rest that comes from trusting you. That as we pray, we would be filled with a realization of your presence with us. And as we play, that we'd be filled with the joy of all the good things in creation that you've given us. Our family, our friends, the relationships that we have, the material goods that you've blessed us with. And God, as we do all of this, we pray that you'd be honored and glorified as you lift our burdens and as we praise you as a good God of celebration and rest, because Jesus is our King and he has overcome. And we trust you.